So good evening, everybody.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Welcome home.
Nice to see you. Thank you, Laurent. Good to see you. Thank you for coming. I had a conversation with someone in the Sangha the other day, and I don't sort of plan these talks, as you know, but it was around me. I was thinking a little about it's something we should talk about. But then when Laurent came in, then he crystallized the concept for me, crystallized the understanding that I had. So thank you for your Dharma talk. If you hadn't come in, we don't know what this Dharma talk would be. The person I spoke to told me that they were talking to someone who used to live here, but has been gone for quite some time. And during the last year, the person's circumstances with family has become really terrible, really dreadful, involving a child, and mental illness, and desperate straits all the way around. And the mother making great sacrifices in order to take care of herself and try to deal with the child and help the child. There's no money in the family. And so the Sangha member said to me that they didn't even think about what to say. They just said, "That is just terrible. That is just horrendous." And the mother, the woman that she was talking to, said, "Oh, that is the first kind and useful thing anyone has said to me. Everybody has been giving me all kinds of advice. And they've been telling me, oh, well, there must be a plan, or there must be a reason, or there's, you know, God never gives you more than you can handle. And just, you know, I feel buried in being unseen." And the Sangha member said that it's not like they thought about what to say. They just responded to what was actually there. This is a horrible situation, a horrible human and tragic situation. So that's a very important thing for us to know, that sometimes the ability to respond to what's actually right in front of us is the enactment of our bodhisattva vow right there. And if we're not there, we cannot do it. And so this person in the Sangha said to me, "Geez, Zen really works." I said, "Well, I don't know if Zen works, but you work." Well, it's very important for us to know. So when Laurent came in, he bowed and turned around, bowed, and he fixed his pillow and arranged everything. He was actually doing everything just the way we do it. Right? He wasn't doing it the way he wanted to do it. He was doing it the way we do it. And of course, the rest of you have been doing that also. And there's a reason that we do things the way we do it, and that we repeat them over and over and over again. Because our practice has been designed to help us actually be exactly where we are, doing exactly what we're doing. Not what we feel like doing or don't feel like doing, or have some kind of like creative impulse, and you know, suddenly we say, "We'll put the pillow on our head, maybe that will be interesting." No, we just do it the same way, because by doing it the same way, we surrender to the fact that there's a way to do it. And by doing that, we continue to learn how to show up doing what we're actually doing, without an idea, without a concept, without some notion of, you know, individual expression, which hopefully somebody will notice and think we're wonderful. We just get on our knees and fix the pillow, then we just stand up, then we just bow, then we just turn around. And the more we're willing to give ourselves to that, the more we're actually giving ourselves to ourselves. The stakes are very high. If we're able to actually do the thing we're doing, body and mind, then when someone tells us a horrible story, we can say, that is really terrible. We're no longer caught by the concepts of, oh, what should I say? Or what would be a good thing to say? Or what shouldn't I say? Or maybe I shouldn't be involved in this? Or is it safe for me? All that concept just disappears because we're used to just simply doing what's right in front of us in the way that brings us alive. So you see, the stakes are quite high. When we do the things we're doing according to the practice as it's been taught, we're actually bringing ourselves to life. It may seem the opposite. You say, oh, no, you're just deadening yourself. It's just rote. Yeah, it's just rote. It's just repetition. But I've talked in the past about the spirit of repetition. And the spirit of repetition in Zen is the spirit of life itself. You give yourself to it, no matter what, completely, every single time. Because the truth is, there is no repetition. If I scratch my head now and I scratch my head now, these are two completely different acts. If this person who, if this mother comes and talks to the Sangha member at 1 o'clock and then at 2 o'clock, those are two completely different opportunities to come to life and to bring some love and some compassion to this person. So it's very important for us to understand that there's a spirit with which we practice that is intended from the very beginning to let us show up actually as we are, where we are, and to be with what's right in front of us. And this was Suzuki Roshi's teaching. And this is why I told you the story of when this Korean master came to my teacher and said, what is your teacher's dharma? My teacher's answer was, right in front of you. Right in front of you. Now, he didn't just mean himself. He meant right in front of you. That is Suzuki Roshi's dharma. Right in front of you. Not somewhere else. Not lost in thought. Not lost in fancy ideas or concepts. The more we give ourselves completely to the way we do things, the more we're actually able to show up in the world according to our bodhisattva vow. The more we're able to see past our own projections, past our own transferences, past our own delusions, to what's really right there. The more we're able to see what's really right here. And the more we're able to see what's really right here, the more we're able to see completely. If I said to you, how's the weather in Chicago or in Toronto, you would say, I don't know. I'm not in Toronto. I have to go Google it. You know, I have to go look it up. And that's right. You can actually not know anything about Toronto when you're sitting right here. You can have ideas about it, but you have to be there in order to be there to know something about it. The same is true when we encounter suffering in the world. No matter how many ideas we have about it, it's only when we actually allow ourselves to encounter it that we can do something about it. Believe it or not, every time during Zazen we bring ourselves back to our breath, we are practicing showing up so that when a mother comes and tells you a horrible story, you can say, that is really terrible. It isn't just a method. It's fuel for a bodhisattva vow. And the more we practice it, and the more we're willing to surrender to it, and the more we're willing to give ourselves to it completely, the more able we are to be of some use in the world. How can we help the world if we're not here? How can we know the weather in Toronto if we're not in Toronto? How can we be a white bird in the snow, as Suzuki Roshi talked about, if we're not a white bird? How can we be ourselves if we're not ourselves? And how can we be ourselves if all we have is an idea of ourselves? The idea we have of ourselves is not ourselves. No matter what the idea is, sometimes we think we're a wonderful, that's just still an idea. And sometimes we think we're terrible, That's still just an idea. All practice is intent upon allowing us to fully experience what we actually are in every single moment of our life. And while that may sound selfish, it actually is done with the spirit of finding out who and what we are on behalf of life itself. That means all-inclusive life. So please understand what the nature of this practice is. Don't sell it short. Don't think it's some kind of rote thing. Don't think you know what Zen is. Practice it. Just like don't think you know what you are. Practice it. I got an absolutely charming email just before coming here today. About a week ago, I was invited to join this Facebook group of my high school graduating class. And, you know, I'm you know, a kind of a horrible person, so I didn't want to be on Facebook. Everyone wants to be on Facebook. I'm like in the Facebook group for horrible people. I don't want to be on it. But I looked into it, and there were all these wonderful people that I knew as kids. So I've been communicating like crazy with these people I haven't seen since 1964. So, you know, 47 years. And I got an email from a woman that I know, Lourdes Garcia, who I liked very much. And I wrote something back to her, and she replied, and she said, "Do you remember, quote, do you want to dance?" So I wrote back and said, "Well, I remember the song. Do you have something else in mind?" So just before coming, she wrote, "Visualize this. I'm walking down the hallway between classes with Mariana Lopez, and suddenly a tornado hits and I'm lifted off the ground and spun by my waist through the air. Is it a tornado? Is it a carousel? And then you put me down. Turn me around and say, do you want to dance? I blush. I turn red, that stinker, and I smile." So I wrote back and said, "Oh, that, do you want to dance?"
You're turning red again.
So I said, "Well, I always thought you had such a beautiful inner light, such integrity and intelligence, and such a rare beauty, but I was so shy, I didn't know any other way to connect. Yes, I am a stinker, but do you want to dance?" So, Lourdes, she was just so wonderful. She stayed in the Bronx. She taught at my high school for 24 years, and then became principal of the toughest and worst high school in the Bronx for 11 years.
Wow.
She stayed the whole time in the worst part of the Bronx. And then she retired and moved to North Carolina. Wonderful, dedicated person. But she showed me in this little email, I mean, it was charming, of course, and to have that part of me brought back, you know, mm-hmm. to myself. And to get a chance to say basically, "Well, you know, I loved you, and I didn't know what to do, so I threw you through the air." But it gave me a chance to realize that there's a kind of energy that we have. There's a kind of life force energy. It's always there. It's available to us. And we can contact it, not just when we're, you know, 16 or 17, you know, but now. As soon as I read it, I felt like I wanted to jump, you know, through the air and turn everything and spin it, ask it to dance. So that's our serious Zen practice too, you know. We should allow ourselves that kind of joy. And give ourselves that kind of joy. And share it, you know, with the rest of the world. But we can't do it if we're not there. Same thing. Mm-hmm.